your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Shall call. Live you must, and let to live. Fairly take, and fairly give. Do what thou will, if it harms none. By the magic of all, may it be done. Nine woods in the cauldron go, as above, so below. Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron on the Para-X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Merry meet, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. And if you like ghost stories, you've come to the right place. The opening music was called Lost Souls, and I'm sure my guest, the legendary ghost hunter Richard Sennett, has come across a great many lost souls, because it's been probably, 35 years or so that he's investigated haunted sites and people plagued by ghosts. And he's an established historian, lecturer, specializing in California history. And more locally, the history of the establishment of the cities of Ventura and Ojai and the founding of Ventura County. And because he's also known as the best storyteller around, and since this is the time of year to share spooky tales, we're going to be treated to some of Richard's favorite ghost stories. So if anybody has any questions or comments for Richard, please send them to me in the Para-X chat room. And I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. If you're not in chat, please come and join us at paraxradionetwork.com. So, Richard, welcome. It's been a long time.
Glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're here, too, and I think everybody else is going to be, too, because, I mean, you've got ghost stories galore, and I'm so excited to hear some of them. And, you know, when I contacted you this week, sorry, to ask you to be a guest on my show, you mentioned that the first story that came into your mind is the Char Man. And that made my imagination run wild. I mean, I'm thinking of barbecues, charcoal, fire. And so I'm kind of anxious to hear all about him.
Oh, he is the ghost of the Ojai Valley. He's perhaps the best known ghost of all of Ventura County. Everyone's heard of Char Man. Now, there's a road in Ojai, a very narrow, thin, twisting road where the oak trees actually meet right over the highway, forming a long, dark tunnel. This is called Creek Road, and it follows the old San Antonio Creek, so it twists and turns. But it is perhaps the most haunted road, at least in California. I've managed to number 13 ghosts just on this little short road. But of all the ghosts that are said to haunt Creek Road, the most active, the most seen, is that of Char Man. Now, what is his story? Well, the story is that there was a farmer who lived on Creek Road, and he wasn't a very good farmer. In fact, he was an alcoholic. And he was so bad that his wife and kids left him. But he stayed on in the house, and he was trying to eke out a living on his land. But this was 1950, And back in the Ojai Valley, there wasn't a lot for young people to do. There still isn't, I suppose. And so what did they do to amuse themselves in that era before the internet or Facebook or anything else? They would get old cars out of the junkyard, you know, Model T, Fords, Model A's, and then fix them up in the high school shop class and turn them into hot rods. Mm-hmm. Then they could drive them around with their radios blaring out rock and roll music from Wolfman Jack. And then with their ponytailed girlfriends, they would drive around late at night and acquire illegally some beer, you know, Brew 102 or Hams or something of that type. And they would go out and party listening to music. Well, wouldn't you know it, they started to party on the old farmer's land. In fact, they would get drunk and they would drive their hot rods over his crops and knock down his fences. He grew very angry about this. You can't blame him. And he finally went out to their partying when he heard them one night and yelled at him, "Get off of my land! You're trespassing!" And what did they do? Being teenagers, they just laughed at him. Well, he was so mad and drunk, he went back to the house and brought a 12-gauge shotgun. And then he fired one of the barrels up in the air. Bam! I said, "You get out of here!" And what did they do now? Crazy old fool with a shotgun. That's the last thing you want to, you know, angry at you. So they got in their hot rods and they drove away. Well, they went about 2 miles down Creek Road and pulled over at a wide spot, continued to party, and then they started to think, you know, that crazy old fool? Why, he could have hurt somebody. Why, if he had dropped the shotgun, it could have gone off and killed someone. Someone should go back and teach that old fool a lesson. Well, one of the kids, drunker than the others, got in his hot rod and he drove back to the house. He cut the engine and he drifted, he coasted down the hill and stopped at the farmhouse. And laughing, he got out of his trunk a gallon can of gasoline. He used it to prime his carburetor of his hot rod. And he took the contents, and there was a little tool shed. Why, it hadn't been painted in a dozen years. And he poured the gasoline on that old dry wood, and it just soaked up the gas. And then laughing, he lit his Zippo lighter and caught the little building on fire. Why, that'd teach him. Burned down his tool shed. So he got back in the car and started the engine and drove away. Well, the old farmer, he was asleep. You know, he was drunk, asleep, passed out. And that little wind came up. And as the little building burned, some of the embers flew across the yard into the roof of the farmer's house. It was an old shake roof, a wooden roof. He hadn't cleaned the gutters out. They were full of dry leaves. But wouldn't you know it, the whole house caught fire like tinder. And the old man didn't wake up until a burning ember came and touched his cheek and woke him out of a sound sleep. But by then it was too far gone. He couldn't escape. And he was burned to death in the conflagration. Well, that's not the end of the story, though. Mm. Because guess what? His ghost haunts Creek Road. And guess what? He hates teenagers.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, well, I can understand why, right? Mm-hmm. And he hates rock and roll music. And he's walking around in a burned state, hideously deformed, a skull for a head, just a little bit of flesh clinging to it. His clothes, burned, tattered rags. He shuffles along. Now, what's he looking for? Why, he's looking for the teenager who started the fire. Mm. Even though that was many years ago, he still seeks him out. Well, what's so amazing is people have seen Charman. Now, you would think if you're a high school kid going to Nordhoff High School in Ojai, the last place you'd ever want to go is Creek Road, right? Because the murderous ghost. Yeah, of course. But what do they do?
They taunt him and call him like Mary Worth or something, yeah?
Right. And they play the loud rock and roll music that he hates. And for a lot of them, it makes sense. What's more fun, looking for Charman or doing your homework? Of course. And so they drive down there on their cars. And remarkably, some have seen him. And I've gotten stories that make your hair stand on end. One brave young couple drove down Creek Road. They went all the way playing their music. They didn't see a dang thing. They were laughing. Must be no Charman, they thought. And so even braver than others, braver than me, they parked alongside of the road. And then they did what American couples have been doing since the invention of the automobile. They've been parking. And they told me the story. I didn't ask them what they were doing. I was discreet. But somehow they were in the back seat of their car. And the girl looked up and she heard a tapping on the window and looked up and saw the burned, hideous face of Charman looking in at her. She let out a terrible scream. Now, the boy looked up from his activities, and he saw the thing as well, moving away from the car. Now, today, that couple will not drive on Creek Road, not in the nighttime or in the daytime. So that's just one of many of the stories I've gotten. Perhaps the most exciting was a young man at Nordhoff High School. He was a member of the football team, big kid. I think he's going to college now. He's a pre-med student, actually. But this is when he was at Nordhoff High School in his senior year. And, of course, how it is with kids in their senior year, they go out partying a lot. His father put his foot down and said, you got to be home by midnight or 1 o'clock at least, you know. You've got to not burn the midnight oil. And he said, sure. But he went to a party in Miner's Oaks, not far away. And he was there till almost 2:30. So he knew he was going to get in trouble. So he drove down Creek Road, a dark night. There's no traffic or anything. But wouldn't you know it, when he got down Creek Road, his car just died. Just died all of a sudden. The motor stopped running. So he pulled over to the side and he tried to restart it and it wouldn't start. He's about a mile from home. He lives right off Creek Road. So I thought, well, I'll just walk home. It's a beautiful summer night. I'll do that. So he starts walking home in the darkness. Now, there's no street lights there. There's no sidewalks, just a dirt on the side of the road. And he's walking, and he heard something following him. Crunch, crunch, crunch in the dead leaves. What would you do if you heard that behind you?
Run like hell, yeah.
That's exactly what he did. And then he heard right behind him the crunching got faster and faster. And then something grabbed him. He was wearing his Letterman jacket that he was so proud of. Something got him right by the collar. Now, it was summertime. He didn't have it zipped up, even though he's proud of it. And it pulled him back. And he said it was super strong. And he smelt this terrible stench, the odor of burned human flesh. A sickly sweet. And he pulled right out of that jacket and he took off running. He said if he had been timed, he would have beaten the 4-minute mile. Well, he got home. And, of course, nobody was awake by now. It was close to 3. And so he went to bed, couldn't sleep very well. He got up late early in the morning, told his father his car broke down. That's why he was late coming in. And his father, so it's an old car he had. Father said, okay, well, got some jumper cables. We'll start it up again. And so he took his dad's car, and they drove back to where he had left his automobile. Mm-hmm. And he was looking all over the side of the road for his jacket. Where was it? Couldn't find it. Finally, he got up to his car, and his dad said, well, you just humor me, son. Just open the door. Don't pop the hood. Just put your key in it and see if it'll start. He said, well, I tried it. It just won't. Just humor me. Go ahead. So the kid got in the car, put in the key, turned it, started right up perfectly. Mm-hmm. So he drove home. But those who drive on Creek Road late at night seeking the Charmer, and everyone who has seen this apparition claims that now he wears a Letterman jacket from Nordoff High School. Baby, it's a trophy that he's now acquired. Now, there were sightings of Charman all over, but they're mostly at a bridge called Charman Bridge near Camp Comfort. And lots of locals call it Charman Bridge, but it's not officially named that, of course. But strange things happen on that particular span. And they have ghostly children that have been seen on that span. And there's a story I was never able to confirm of in the 1930s, early 30s, a school bus full of children plunged into the rain-swollen creek, and a number of the kids lost their lives. The bridge was washed out. They have a new bridge. It's not much better. It's actually the third bridge that's been on that site. Well, people have seen ghost kids dressed in old-fashioned clothing walking on that bridge. Now, most of the time, the stream under the bridge has a little trickle of water in it, and it's mostly just sharp rocks. If you would fall into that creek, you could break your arm or your leg or your head. Yeah. Well, people have seen these kids walking on the railing of the bridge. Quite dangerous. Well, it's a true story I got from a policeman. He works in Ojai. He'd gotten a call from some of the campers saying they'd seen kids on that bridge walking on the railing. Dangerous. So they called the police, and the policeman sent this man to check it out. He got to the bridge. Nobody there. So he kept going. He drove all the way down Creek Road, and then he checked the other bridges there. He was coming back. But then as he approached that same bridge, he saw two kids walking on the railing. You know, back with their arms out, one dressed in old coveralls, and another one in a dress and a bonnet with a pinafore apron around her waist. So he didn't want to scare them, so he pulled the police car over, and then he slowly got out and said, well, come on down there, take your time, don't slip, it's dangerous. And then he noticed the two children looked at him, surprised, and then they jumped from the bridge into the creek below. He yelled no, thinking that they'll be injured. So he got his flashlight and he went up to the bridge. Nothing there. No one. And the policeman told me his story, and he never reported it. He said, whatever you do, don't tell the story. Or if you do, don't use my name. I promised him I wouldn't. I said, well, why don't you want us to use your name? He said, if they found out about it at the station house, why, they'd put me on the rubber gun squad, whatever that is. But it's certainly something he didn't want to be part of. Yeah. But that's just a couple of the ghosts there. Perhaps our weirdest ghost on Creek Road dates back to the old gold rush times of early California. Mm. It's the story of the Headless Horseman of Ojai.
Oh, we have one? Wow.
Yes. Yeah, it's nothing like that Ichabod Crane, Washington Irving story. And that was a nice little Halloween tale. Mm-hmm. And Disney made a great cartoon with Bing Crosby doing the narration of all people.
Yes, he did. Yes.
And they bring it out on Disney Channel every Halloween. Mm-hmm. And most of the kids have never heard of Bing Crosby, but they've heard that. It's a wonderful story. This is nothing like it.
Oh, okay.
It's a Latino story that was told in as far back as the 1880s. That's unique to our area, as far as I can tell. This is what happened. In the Gold Rush times, there was this bandit, an outlaw. He was a terrible fellow. And he murdered and looted and robbed people all up and down the state. And he was notorious. And of course, he was so evil that he stopped worshiping God. And he started to worship Satan as his God. It's a Latino story, and they tend to be very religious, you see.
Yes.
Anyway, El Diablo was his God. And he was riding with his gang. And finally, one day, he decided to rustle the cattle at the Rancho Arnez near the little town of Oakview. Mm-hmm. Well, he picked the wrong time and the wrong place, because as he got in and was taking the cattle out, he didn't know that Don Jose Arnez's daughter, Maria, was in love with a vaquero. And every night or every other night, he would come to a window and play a little song for her. She was very in love with this, thought it was really cool. So she was waiting at the window for her boyfriend to come. He didn't show up that night, but she saw in the moonlight all these people stealing their cattle.
Yeah.
And they were quiet. They were getting away with it, but she ran downstairs and told her father, Papa, they're stealing our cattle. Wouldn't you know it? That night, he was entertaining 12 lawmen from Santa Barbara. And when they all heard about it, they got on their horses and went after the rustlers. And they caught up to him. Now the outlaw, the bad man, he saw the posse coming. And he said to his men, every one of you scatter. Everyone goes a different direction. No one can follow us all. And so he took his fine horse that he had stolen for himself, a great thoroughbred, and he rode north towards Ojai. And the others went in different directions, but the lawmen had a scientific tool with them. They had a telescope, and they could see who was giving the orders. And so they didn't follow the small fry. They went right after the leader. They were pursuing him. Now, he saw them, were after him. He was riding north, but he wasn't afraid because his fine thoroughbred horse could outrun any of the old government plugs that the lawmen were riding. You know, it was the lowest bidder kind of thing. They got cheap horses for them. And so he was riding along till he got to the old oak tree at the Villanova School. And wouldn't you know it, his luck gave out again. His beautiful, fine horse put its hoof into a gopher hole and broke its leg. Now, there's no way you can fix a broken leg on a horse. So he was thrown to the ground, and he shot the horse in the head to get it out of its misery so it wouldn't suffer. And then he took all of his guns, and he waited under the oak tree because he knew those lawmen would catch up to him. And he knew he had but one chance to escape, and that was to kill every one of the 12 lawmen. So he got his guns out and his ammunition. He waited. But those lawmen, remember they had that telescope? They could see the dead horse in the moonlight. And they could see the man by the tree waiting for them. The sun was coming up and they all scattered, drew their Winchesters and came at him a different direction. There was a terrific gun battle in the dawn. And finally, the outlaw was gunned down and killed. But this is the 19th century, and so the lawmen were equipped with a shovel, and they dug a grave right there under that tree. It was in the shade, after all. And then they rolled the body in. And one of the lawmen got a bad idea. He said, you know, that was one mean hombre. Well, I bet you he's got a reward for him. You know, wanted dead or alive? We could be rich men if we can prove we got him. I said, yeah, well, you should have thought of that before we dug the grave. And that same man got the shovel and went over to the grave, and he looked down at the body. And then using the blade of the shovel, he cut off the head. Oh. Then he reached down, and he grabbed the head by its long hair and pulled it up and tied it to his saddle. Oh. Then they buried the body, and they rode off to Santa Barbara to get their reward. But this is a Latino story, and it's a ghost story, so it doesn't end there. What happened? what happened to the soul of that outlaw? Well, first he went up to St. Peter's at the gates of heaven. Of course, what did St. Peter say? Get out of here. You're not one of our people. He pulled a big lever and a big slide appeared. Woo, down he goes to the very depths of hell. And he ended up at the gates of hell. And who was waiting for him at those fiery gates? Why, El Diablo himself. That was his man. And then El Diablo said to him, what happened to your head? And the outlaw answered, he said, well, your majesty, I don't know how he did it, but he did it. He said, your majesty, they cut my head off. And the devil got really angry. Why, he stomped his hoof. And he got all red in the face. Well, redder than he ordinarily is. And he said, you go back up to the earth and get your head. And so he said, well, wait a minute. Those guys have horses. I've been talking to St. Peter. I've been talking to you and all that. And plus, I've been condemned to hell for my many sins of murders. You know what the devil did? He reached inside his waistcoat and he pulled out a sheet of parchment. And with a flaming pen, he wrote a get out of hell pass. Wouldn't that be nice to have?
Yes.
And, the guy said, well, you're really not such a bad fellow. But, oh, wait a minute. They've got a head start on me. That's a joke. But
unintended, yes.
No pun. And the devil said, you wait right out here. And he went back inside the fiery regions of hell. And he pulled out his own stallion. Did you know the devil has his own, has a horse?
Oh.
Yeah. Of course, it's an old story. I'm told today he has a Porsche. But in fact, that was a horse. So it was a very fast horse. And it's a thing of evil, as big as a Percheron. Eyes glow like burning coal, and it can run at a mile a minute. Well, the devil loaned him the horse. And then the outlaw said, well, hey, you know, I don't have a gun. I don't have a head. They're going to laugh at me. What am I going to do when I catch up to them? And the devil said, you wait right there. They went back inside the infernal regions of hell, and he came out with his own lariat. Do you know the devil has a lariat? He doesn't use it to round up cattle or horses, no siree. He uses it to round up the souls of sinners. Now, if he gets that glowing rope around you, he can jerk the soul right out of your body. And then what happens to your body without a soul in it? It drops dead. Not a mark on it, just dead. And so he loaned the lariat to his minion, and then he sent him out searching for his head. Well, he never got his head, but he made a new deal with his boss. And that deal is, as long as he can come back to earth and bring back seven sinners' souls, his own well-deserved punishment will be put off for another month. And they say he always rides on the last night of the month. Well, that's coming up, isn't it? Halloween. And they say that he rises out of his grave at the Villanova School, and he rides all around the Ojai Valley trying to find those seven sinners. Does he ever get enough? No, not enough sinning in Ojai. And he rides down Creek Road all the way to Ventura to get more sinners to fill his quota. Does he ever get enough in Ventura? Nope. Yeah. But you know, they say he keeps going to Oxnard. And then at Oxnard, he never fails to get his quota of sinners. And then with them strapped to his saddle, he returns to his grave as a cock crows and the sun comes up with those screaming souls attached to his saddle. That's a story. That's a great boogeyman story, right?
Yes,
you better do your chores or the headless horseman will come for you. Well, you know the weird thing? People have seen him. I talked to a young man. This is a true story. He's a waiter at downtown Ventura. He works at a place called the Tavern now, I believe. He told me this story. He was at a party in Miners Oaks, and he'd been drinking, and he unwisely decided to drive home on Creek Road. He thought there were fewer cops on Creek Road. He was mistaken. There's actually more cops on Creek Road. But he was driving Creek Road, and late at night, he had all the windows open and the music playing, trying to sober himself up. And he saw something behind him. No headlights, something moving in the darkness of the trees. Finally, he got to Charmand Bridge. And there in the moonlight from the bridge, he could see that the thing following him was a big black horse with a man on the horse, all dressed in black, a man that had no head. Well, what would you do if you saw that following you?
Yep, you know it.
He pedaled to the metal. That's what he did. He just went out, and he was taking those turns on that narrow roadway. And guess what? It was keeping up with him. You know, horses don't go more than about 26 miles an hour, even at their fastest. This was keeping up with him at 60 miles an hour. And he said he was taking some of those turns on two wheels. Well, a lot of accidents happen on Creek Road. Maybe this is why. He finally got to the main highway, Highway 33, and it stopped. And it continued on. Mm-hmm. I'm told that if you've done a few bad things, and if you should ever find yourself on Creek Road or in Ojai or Ventura or Oxnard, and if you should hear the hoofbeats following you of the Headless Horseman, you have only one chance to escape. Do you want to hear it?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah? If you do, this is what you've got to do. You have to find a church. And all you've got to do is touch the door of the church. If you touch the door of the church, you'll be safe because he's a thing of evil and cannot approach the church. He'll ride past you laughing. Next time I'll get you, he'll say. Well, that's what they say. But I always had fun telling that story until something happened a few years back. Right after it was the first of the year. I was telling the story on the last night of the month. The first of the next month, there was a story in the newspaper. They found a guy dead over by the old mission. He had his hand out like he was trying to touch the door, but he was a few feet short. Didn't have a mark on his body. They said it was some homeless person who must have died of a heart attack or something. Of course, we know the truth, don't we?
Yes, we do.
The heart attack. It was the horseman got him. He wasn't quite fast enough. If he'd just gotten to the door, maybe he would have lived. But we know the story. You know, our mission is an old one. It was one of the ones founded by Father Hugh Nipero Serra.
I know, and hang on 1 second, because we're going to have to take a quick break, about 2 minutes, but then we're going to talk about Father Sarah and the missions and all sorts of good stuff. So everybody stay put, and we will be right back.
Stirring the Cauldron will be right back, so don't go away.
If you end up with webbed feet,
remember, you've been warned.
Just in time for Halloween. Explore the second edition of the Witch's Oracle deck through 45 innovative cards and enhanced guidebook that peers into the world of the witch. The deck's stunning artwork has a new look and includes 7 brand new inspirational cards. Each card now includes a suggested crystal or gemstone to enhance your reading, as well as a magical incantation that provides energy, reinforces the card's meaning, and helps the desired message to be sent out into the universe. The easy-to-navigate guide also has a new look and offers straightforward, gentle guidance that takes readers through both good times and bad. And now includes a chapter on crystal and gemstone divination by the amazing Nicholas Pearson. The deck can also be used in conjunction with Tarot, the Witch's Oracle. It is a perfect divination deck for witches as well as non-pagans, and is designed to suit both seasoned readers and beginners alike. Find out more about the Witch's Oracle deck at marlabrooks.com, and is now available for pre-ordering from shifferbooks.com and amazon.com.
This is New Aeon Now. News and discussion of the metaphysical, the occult, the paranormal, and much, much more. With your hosts, New Aeon High Priestess Reverend Lily Alley, head of the Draken chapter of the Order of Paranormal Exploration, Christine Matza. The New Aeon is now. Join us every Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern for New Aeon Now.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
And we're back with the legendary Richard Sennett, who is a legendary ghost hunter and a wonderful storyteller. And we were just talking about the missions before the break. And I didn't realize, Richard, because you mentioned that there's all over the Southwest there are tons and tons of missions. I guess I'm just like, I know up and down the coast of California, and I think the only one I've been to is San Juan Capistrano, but the missions have a great deal of history in California history and how we kind of got to where we are in a sense.
Yes, the missions of California are also, not only are they historical, but they're very haunted. Mm-hmm. Everyone in California has a ghost, at least one, if not more. Mm-hmm. The most haunted of all is La Purísima Concepción in Lompoc. Lots of people have seen up to 12 different phantoms there, and they are both monks and padres and soldiers. There was even an uprising and a terrible battle fought there, so good reason why it would be haunted. But Santa Barbara is haunted, San Diego. But remarkably, at the mission in Ventura, we have at least four ghosts there. And there's a ghostly monk who's been seen from since the 1880s. But this is a good ghost, not a bad ghost. Mm-hmm. He evidently is a phantom padre, but he's still trying to help people.
Yeah.
And so seeing this ghost is not a bad thing at all. In fact, he answers people's prayers. People who go in there and have an insoluble problem, they pray for guidance, and then they'll see the ghost monk, and he'll vanish. And wouldn't you know it, right after that, all of their problems just are gone. Because I've got all sorts of stories about the ghost monk and how he has intervened to help people in their lives and change their lives for the better. Mm-hmm. Similar monks are found at Santa Barbara. I've got a great story of tragedy that happened, one of the ones that occurs from time to time. There was a man who was late for work. He worked, I think he was a maintenance fellow, or he did some kind of heavy equipment stuff. Had a big truck, had it home, and he was late, and he had his coffee, and he was going to be late to go to his job. He didn't know that his son, who was like 3 and a half, had a big wheel bicycle and rolled behind him, and he didn't notice him. And he was in such a rush, he backed up and ran over and killed his own son.
Oh.
It's a terrible tragedy. It almost destroyed his marriage. And because he blamed himself justifiably for this terrible act that had occurred. And his sister-in-law was trying to help patch the family up. And she was driving from Lompoc down to Thousand Oaks. And she was on the freeway heading south. She's a good Catholic. And when she got to the sign that marked the mission Santa Barbara, she felt compelled to take the off-ramp and drive to the old mission. She stopped and went into the church itself. And there was nobody there. This was in the middle of the week. There was nothing going on. Mm-hmm. And so she went to the altar rail and began to pray for her brother-in-law. She was praying for him, and then she noticed something nudging her next to her. And it was a monk in a gray outfit. And the gray outfit, he was kind of pushing her. He said, "What's this? You know, the whole church is empty. Why are you you're getting in my space?" She didn't say anything, but she kind of scooched over. He scooched over as well. He was praying as well. Mm-hmm. And then time passed, and he finally stood up and said, "The danger has passed. Everything will be fine right now." Mm. And then he disappeared. Mm. Well, she later found out at that very same moment, her brother-in-law had taken a pistol and was going to blow out his brains because of the horror of the grief that had so destroyed him for what he had done. And he had almost pulled the trigger, but something stopped him, and he changed his mind. That all happened at the same moment she was praying in the church. So some ghosts aren't evil at all. Some of them might actually be quite helpful.
So have you seen any with your own eyes at, like, Buenaventura or any of the other missions?
Yes, I have. In fact, that's what got me involved in all this ghost hunting stuff. Back in 1978, I was doing archaeology at one of the old missions. And before that, I didn't even believe in ghosts. It was something kind of for the funny papers or interesting, you know, but nothing that actually would become such a big part of my life, which is what it did. I was digging there. I was up very late. Everyone else had left the lab to go to bed. I was finishing a project about 12:30. I left the laboratory, went into the courtyard. My original goal was to go and get some cupcakes that were in the kitchen. Eat them. That was my original goal. And I saw in the courtyard a bit of light. It was like a candle floating. And as I said, "Who's that?" I could see finally in the dim light as my eyes became adjusted that it was a monk with a hood. Mm. Now, did that scare me? Of course not. The mission is still a monastery, and monks live there. So I thought, one of the brothers is up late at night. And so I changed my course to talk to him. I got about 12 feet up to this figure, which, by the way, looked very solid. It looked like a guy wearing a monk's habit. Mm-hmm. And bam, he disappeared. Gone. Nothing there anymore. In fact, my jaw dropped. And I first thought he fell in a hole or something. There was no hole. I thought, what was it? And then slowly dawned on me that it must be one of those ghosts they talk about. Mm-hmm. Well, I got scared, by the way. I lost my appetite. Went back to my room. I left the lights on. And I couldn't forget it. If you've seen a ghost, you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. It sticks in your mind. I can't. Even today, I can close my eyes and see it almost as clearly as I could back in 1978. Uh-huh. And I got up the next morning with the archaeological team, and we joined them in this great hallway where we all ate. And the monks ate at the other side of the hall. We were on one side, they were on the other. I saw that we were having flapjacks for breakfast. So I went and joined the monks and discovered they were having steak and eggs.
Oh.
So there's some benefits of being a monk. And gave me some of their steak and eggs. I sat down and talked to them. I asked, anybody like, seen any ghosts around here? They all got quiet. Then they gave me a litany of ghosts they had seen. Balls of light that floated around, little girls, strange figures. The weirdest of all of them, the headless horsewoman who rode around the mission late at night on a white horse, and they knew it was a woman because she was topless from the waist up. And, of course, she didn't need to blush because she had no head. And then I was about to go join the archaeological team, and they said, there's one more ghost story, Brother Joseph. Now, there had been a member of their order, a really great guy who was seen as almost a living saint. You know, he was just perfect. And he gave extra time for the children at the reservation. He did all these great things. And every night at 12:30, he'd light a candle and go from his room to the church and pray for an extra hour. Now, he was an elderly man. He passed away, buried there at the old mission, but they'd see his ghost with the candle going across the courtyard into the church. That's what I saw. Now, a reporter once asked me, how long was it after that sighting that you decided to become a ghost hunter? I said about 30 seconds. I wanted to find out if I was crazy or not. But so far, if I'm crazy, millions upon millions of other people are crazy too.
Yes.
And I've been searching for answers ever since. And I have found every one of the California missions has a ghost linked to it. I was at La Purisima. As a matter of fact, I was there with Zach and his crew, Ghost Adventures. We were investigating, looking for ghosts. And they got a lot of stuff that they never included in our TV shows. I can see why, too. It kind of made them look a little foolish. But there's stuff there. I could have made a good show out of their outtakes. Well, while I was at the mission, I actually went into one of the Padres' rooms and saw a figure coiled up on the floor. And I looked at it, and it was a dog. And a big dog, but it was thin, real, real thin. And it raised its head up to look at me, and then it vanished. Mm. So dogs can be ghosts as well. It was a greyhound. I could tell that from the breed. And I later discovered that the Padres did have greyhounds that they used to run down game when they went hunting, and even to chase down Native Americans who tried to escape the missions. So that vanished away, but it was confirmed that they did have things there. Now, I have never seen something at the mission San Buenaventura, though I've been there a lot, but I did have one strange event happen. And I'll tell it to you because it's very true. I work for the city of Ventura, and I'm a historian by trade, an archaeologist. And they had a group, a bus full of big wigs coming, you know, VIPs, you know. And it was my job to make a slideshow and do the history of the town for these newcomers. Mm-hmm. Well, my job was to take all the pictures. So I went around Ventura getting the historical shots and collecting the historic data. And, of course, it had to include the old mission, which is the start of our community. Mm-hmm. It was a Thursday, I remember. There was nobody in the church. It was like 2 o'clock. I walked in. And I got permission to go in. They know me at the mission. And said, oh, go right on in. I go in to take a picture. As soon as I got in that building, in the chapel, it felt cold and strange. I'd given tours there, all sorts of stuff. Nothing. I'd always felt more comfortable in my own living room. In fact, if anything, I felt rather peaceful as a place goes, not haunted or curious or anything strange. But I went in there that Thursday or Tuesday, and I felt ice cold, like there was unseen eyes watching me. So I started to take the pictures, and I walked down the center aisle I wanted to get a picture of this crucifix, which I got, and as I was lining it up in the camera, I felt something grab me around the waist. Now, it was ice cold, and whatever it was, it seemed to have the ability to go right through my clothing and touch my naked skin, and it was freezing. Of course, I looked. There's nobody there. I took the picture quickly. I decided, time to leave. And I came back the next day to finish the job. There was nothing like that. It was very calm and normal as it always was. But I always wonder, what did I interrupt? It was something that I wasn't supposed to see. And wouldn't you know it, all of the pictures that I took that Tuesday didn't come out. They were all black fog. Nothing seemed to work. But the ones I took the day afterwards worked fine and were useful in my presentation. So it is a haunting place, and I do know that there's something there. I have one story, if you've got time. A young Latino man told me this story, and I believe him. He was about to get married, and in the Latino tradition, especially in the Roman Catholic faith, they believe that before you get married, you have one super colossal confession. You confess everything. So you'll start with a clean slate. Probably isn't a bad idea, really. Yeah. And both the girl and the guys does it. So I'm sure the guys are usually longer. But he made special arrangements. This is going to take a while. And the padre said, okay, come at 10:30 tomorrow. I'll be in the confessional. We'll do this confession for your wedding. Mm-hmm. And he waited. He was outside of his car. He got to 10:30. He climbed in the mission. There was nobody there. He went into the confessional, but he could see through the screen that it wasn't the Monsignor. It was a guy in a monk's habit. And the guy had a beard, and he started the ritual of confession in Spanish, his native language. But the young man told me the Spanish was off. It wasn't the Spanish they use today, but the Spanish they spoke in Spain 200 years ago. He thought to himself, boy, this must be some really conservative order from Spain, maybe, or Andorra or something, you know. So he gave the whole confession to the monk, and he got absolution, and he was about to leave. And just as he left the confessional booth, the Monsignor ran in. I said, oh, I'm sorry. A man was on the phone, and he was threatening to kill himself. So I had to talk him out of it, you know. So I'm sorry I'm late, but I'll hear your confession now. And the young man said, well, that's okay. Your visiting padre has done it for you. And then the Monsignor said, what visiting padre? We have no visiting padre. And he had in his hand, the Monsignor did, the key to the confessional. Did you know they actually locked them up? That's so we laymen can't go inside and hear some confessions.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, oh, by the way, if you pretend to be a priest and you hear a confession and you give absolution, did you know it takes? It's actually good. But the sin will be on your soul after that. So they locked the thing up. So the young man comes out. The Monsignor put the key in to talk to the monk, turned the lock, opened the door. There was nothing there. It was empty. So what do we know? The ghost monk sometimes pinch hits for the priest at the mission if he's called away. So it's kind of an interesting story, and the young man told it to me, totally deadpan. Mm-hmm. And of all the stories, I really believe that this actually happened. So it's but all the missions have ghosts. But why would they have ghosts? Well, my theory is that a lot of it has to do with guilt. A lot of the native people who joined the missions died. They died in huge numbers. You know what the average life of a Native American was? Seven years. Yeah. You join up, you're 10. Odds were by the time you're 17, you're dead. Now, a few lived to be quite old, but the vast majority died. Now, it must have been really hard on the padres because that wasn't part of the plan. You get some Native American, you teach him Spanish, he starts to get the faith, he gets the prayers over it, then he dies. It must have been very frustrating. And it could be that's the reason why they haunt. But people have seen ghost Native Americans, ghostly ladies in white, phantom orbs, even as I noticed at La Purisima, a phantom dog. People have heard ghost horses. All sorts of bizarre apparitions have been seen at all of the California missions. But that also includes missions in Baja, California. Yeah. There was like 33 of them down there. And in Texas, as you may know, one of the most haunted missions of all is the Alamo, where the battle was fought, you know, where Davy Crockett and the Texas Patriots were gunned down by Santa Anna and killed. It's haunted. And so all of these buildings were fortresses of faith seem to have something that causes ghosts to appear in them. Mm-hmm. Why? I don't know. It may have something to do with the building material they're made out of. Now, they're made out of rock and adobe. Maybe the thick walls hold something in. I don't know.
It's an
interesting study about the California missions.
Yes, it is. And since we're running out of time, I want to give you some time because let people know that you give tours, you give lectures, you do all kinds of stuff. So in the couple minutes we have left, tell everybody about that and where they can contact you and all that good stuff.
Well, I do lectures. I've done a lot of paracons all over the West, including Nevada and California. As well, I lecture on what I believe ghosts are and the dangers of ghost hunting. There really are real dangers to be aware of. It isn't just a lark. I'll be doing a lot of tours this Halloween season and doing talks and lectures. On Halloween night, I'll be at the old historic Olivas Adobe here in Ventura, one of the most haunted places in the West Coast. It's an old Spanish two-story adobe where people have seen and photographed ghosts for many years. In fact, if you go on my Facebook site, website, you can actually see some of the pictures people have taken of the ghostly figures at the Olivas Adobe. So it's pretty amazing. I'll be doing a number of tours in the area around Ventura itself. So I'll be keeping busy. I even have planned a seance I'm going to be doing on the 26th at a historic farmhouse, the old Dudley House. I love seances because no two are alike.
Exactly.
They're all different. I've seen apparitions, people floating. It's bizarre.
So what website can they go to get?
Go to richardserrett.com.
Okay. And
richardserrett.com.
And you're also on Facebook, so they can find you there. And
yeah, Richard Serrett, Ghost Hunter.
There you go. And so we've got to run because we're chopping at the bit to get out. So thank you, Richard. Thank you very, very much. You got to come back and do some more, if you don't mind, at some point.
Oh, sure. It'd be a lot of fun.
And thank everybody for listening in tonight as well. And until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2019. The Mysterioso March by Kevin MacLeod is licensed through Incompotech.com.